We'll be honest, for Parshas Tzaveh, this is not the most exciting shir that I've ever given before in my life. It will be because I'm exciting, and I'm sure that everybody's going to be excited while listening to it. But really, the truth is, I got really into the Me'il this year, and I could not figure out what it was. I couldn't figure out the Machlokism. So really, this shir is going to be about Machlokas. That's what the shir is going to be about. And along with it will come a little bit of Torah. There's going to be a little bit behind it. But we're really, there's so much to this, so much that I didn't realize before I started. We're going to have a lot over here. So we're going to skip a pasuk. But Perek Chof Ches Pasuk Lamed Aleph says, V'asisa es me'iloi fod kolot cheilos. You know what? Before that, let's just start off with something simple. The Kohen Hedyot, the regular Kohen, which this week's parsha is mostly about, not the first couple psukim and not the very end, right? But in the middle, the Kohen Hedyot wears four pairs of clothing. You got the regular Michnosayim, which was a linen pair of pants. You have the Kisones Tashbeitz, which was a box work, you know, some like it looked like little boxes, right? Along with also with linen, a white linen, sort of like a long shirt that went all the way down to the bottom of his tunic that goes all the way down. He has a migbas, a large cone-shaped hat, and then an avnate, a belt that went around. Okay, so that's the four that you have over there. He went barefoot, and there was nothing else on him. The Kohen Gadol added on four begadim. The four begadim they added on, aside from the migba'as becoming a mitznefes, the mitznefes is more of a turban, a little bit shorter and a little bit more wide, as opposed to the migba'as, which goes up. Aside from all that, there was the me'il, which was a blue sort of robe that went on top of him, which we're going to talk about today. There was the avnate, there was the choshen and the ephod, which went together. The ephod was an apron made up of all the blue and purple and scarlet threads with golden linen together. So that was like an apron almost. And it was attached to the choshen. We all know the choshen because that's with all the names of the shvatim, the stones that were on top of the choshen. The Urim Mitumim was inside there. And they also added on the tzitz hakodesh. One little thing that people don't realize is that the Kohen and the Kohen Gadol also wore tefillin. There was tefillin that they wore on their head in between the tzitz and the migbah / the mitznefes. It was right there. Some say it was miraculous. Others say it was just pashut, that they put it right there, but there was tefillin as well. Not everyone, I shouldn't say everyone agrees with, but almost everyone agrees with that idea. In these psukim, in Pasuk Lamed Aleph and Perek Chof Ches, it goes through what the me'il was and how it was made. Says the pasuk, Vasi says me'il eifod kalil tcheles. You should make the me'il of the eifod, notice that, the me'il of the eifod entirely of blue wool. It should be entirely with blue wool. Vasi sa'al shulav, now this is skipping a pasuk, we're going to Lamed Gimel. Vasi sa'al shulav rimone tcheles. You will make on the hem of the me'il pomegranates made of tcheles vargam etolashani, of blue, purple, and red wool. Al shulav saviv, it goes around the hems. Upamone zav besocham saviv. And then golden bells, the word besocham is weird. Seemingly it means within them. Saviv going around. So on the bottom you have those little things. Everybody knows on their tzitzis. If you have wool pair of tzitzis, you got those little things hanging down right in the front. That is supposedly like the pomonim and the bells and the pomegranates, the rimonim that are down there. Now, again, this clothing that the Kohen Gadol wore was the only one that was entirely blue. There was entirely white. There was blue added in to the choshen and to the ephod and to the other parts, possibly the avnate. Maybe that was there. But there was nothing else that was all blue except for this me'il. Now, Rashi says in Pasuk Dalid, all the way before, it was a long shirt. It was like the white shirt underneath. It was a long shirt on top of that. The long shirt had long sleeves that went all the way, and it went all the way down. If you look in the back of your sheets on page 4, you'll see on the right-hand side, that's what the me'il looked like according to Rashi. Long sleeves, a long shirt, it goes all the way through, and that's what it was supposed to be. It seems to have been a round bottom as well, without any breaks at all, just one round bottom that went all the way through. The only way to wear this shirt is to simply put it over your head, pull it down, and it would be like a regular robe. That's what you put on. The Ramban and the Rabbeinu Bachaya argue and say that it's a robe that you could wrap yourself up in. It's got to be something that you could wrap around the person and be able to put it on. A shirt cannot be used to wrap around your body. That's not possible. In Shmuel Aleph, remember Shaul HaMelech went into a cave to go to the bathroom, and David HaMelech was hiding from Shaul in the cave. David HaMelech is in the cave hiding from Shaul, and Shaul HaMelech goes into the cave, and David HaMelech cuts off a tiny little bit of the me'il that he was wearing. It says the word me'il over there. He was cutting off a tiny little bit. He cut off the corner, it says. Says the Ramban, it's got to have a corner. Meaning, according to Rashi, it's one long thing that goes all the way around. But the pasuk says that he cut off a corner. There's no corner in something round. At least by normal things.
Mishal is not the Kohen Gadol, so maybe his meal is different.
That's true, but the word me'il is used for that. What is a me'il, so to speak? It seems like a me'il is something with corners. That's what he describes it as.
Covers you like a coat.
That's true. No, but the fact is we see a me'il with corners. So says the Ramban, that should be. Rather, he says, yeah.
Considered a me'il because it has a corner. It has two corners.
What are you talking about? You mean, in other words, like this?
Yeah.
In other words, like this?
Yeah.
Because it goes like that? We'll talk about it in a second. But yeah, in a way, it will be. So let's see like this. First of all, he says it was a long piece of clothing that had no sleeves and an opening by the neck for the Kohen to stick his head through, meaning it was attached around the neck and then it was open from there down. The question is how, but it seems that the Ramban is saying the following. There was a neck, a little thing around the neck, and then it opened from there all the way down. And the rest of it, there was two different parts, one over here, and you know those jackets that have a split right down the middle, right? That goes all the way up the middle, you know, the middle of the back? That's what the me'il was like. It was split up the back, split up the front, although not everybody says it was split up the back. There's a kash on what the Ramban means, but definitely over here, there was a right-hand side, there was a left-hand side, and according to the Ramban, just attached to right over here would be like this. Literally, like this is attached to me on top, and then everything going down, just all the way down, that's how the me'il looked. The Ralbag also learns it that way. The splits were on the two sides, the right and the left, and the arms poked out from holes in the side. If you look at the back again, you'll see the Ralbag, the way the Ralbag and the Rambam learn it, you'll see it, it's more like the Rambam, we should say. It's right there, you see it's attached right around there, and then it's got a hole right down the middle, right in the front, to be able to show it that way. Now, the Rambam in Hilchos Klei Mikdash Perktes Halacha Gimel says the meal was split up to look like a very long talus katan. That's how, at least, the Kesef Mishnah understands it over here. It seems to be like that. There was nothing. We'll get to that. But there was nothing attaching the two splits to one another. Right. So the way the Rambam, according to the Kesef Mishnah, is the Ralbag in the middle over here, where it looks like a long pair of tzitzis that goes through. The Rambam is not clear about what he means, but he says there are no sleeves. That's one thing he definitely says, no sleeves. And he says there are two splits. The problem is he doesn't understand, doesn't explain where the splits are. Are the splits here and here in the front and the back, or are the splits on the side? That he doesn't explain. The Ravid argues, he says, I have no idea where the Rambam got that from, that there aren't any sleeves. The Ora Sameach says it comes from a Gemara in Yuma, but he says, I have no idea what that means. It seems there are sleeves. And in fact, the Gemara in Yuma seems to prove from the Me'il what a sleeve should be made out of. It says what Bate Yad are made of. How do you make a sleeve? It seems to prove it from the Me'il. So it's a very strange idea that the Rambam says there are no sleeves. The Ravid says, how did he know that? How does he get that out? The Radvaz. Now, the Radvaz was an Egyptian posek. He lived in the 1500s. He lived in Cairo, just like the Rambam, but obviously hundreds of years later. The Radvaz writes on the Rambam, and he writes over here that it must have been similar to the way that the Ramban understands it. That again, it was attached to the front and the hole was down the middle. And there were holes on the side where the arms went out, where it wasn't exactly sleeves, but it wasn't exactly a hole either. It was something a little bit different. That was basically it. And that's that. There was something that goes in one way. His reasoning is that a kanaf would not be this. In other words, your tzitzis is not made up of a kanaf and a kanaf. It's made up of this, I guess, one section here, another section in the back, and that's that. A kanaf literally should be side and side, like a jacket that you're wearing. It should be a kanaf and a kanaf. So the Radvaz understands the Rambam as being just like that. The Malbim says that seems to be the best pshat, since the Pasuk puts together ephod and me'il. He understands it that one is covering up for one another. When the ephod shows, the me'il is open. When the ephod does not show, the me'il covers it up. Everybody knows the ephod was an apron almost. It looked like an apron. It covered up this side and went around, but it was open in the back. The me'il covered up the parts the ephod wasn't in. That's why you put ephod and me'il together. We'll talk about the Netziv in a little bit. But the Mizrahi is not bothered. Mizrahi says on Rashi that an outer shirt very well could be wrapped around. And not only that, but an outer shirt could have corners on the bottom as well. On most, I shouldn't say most of your shirts. On many shirts, I didn't specifically choose a shirt like this. It doesn't have to be rounded like this. It could be going up and going down. And therefore, because of that, in theory, the shirt could have corners that allow it to be considered like that. Now, obviously, we're going to get into this later on, but there is seemingly a clear raya, like Rashi, that it was closed off on the sides instead of open, because otherwise it was just a big pair of tzitzis, which should have been chayiv and tzitzis. And that's what you mentioned before, right? Right? It's an obvious question that's going to be mentioned over here. I'm sorry?
The ill was one half.
Yeah.
Apron was the other half.
No. There were two sides to it. There definitely were two sides. The question is, what do you do with it? You know, it says shulav, so there definitely has to be two sides. I will just tell you as we go on. I was once listening to a shir. I went to, when I lived in Ramat Eshkol, right off of Paran. If you go down Paran a little bit, right by, there's a little mall there, like a little strip mall. Right down the stairs, there's the bumblebee shul, right? If you know what I'm talking about. It's a big yellow shul that looks like a bumblebee hive. So I went down there. I went down for, I forgot what it was. It was one of those shiurim that they give like once every month or whatever it is. I sat down and I went there and I saw a rav. I don't know where this rav was a rav in, some yeshiva somewhere. And the guy was wearing a regular jacket, but he had cut the jacket in the back. The back had like a little bit of a slit. He cut it up just a little bit further and he put tzitzis on the four corners of his jacket, of his suit jacket. So he had two tzitzis hanging down from here. It wasn't like rounded off corners like this. It was like a straight corner and he put it two over here and he put two in the back. And I was so distracted, I still to this day have absolutely no idea what he said. The whole time I'm just staring at it. Of course there was tchelis on it. There was no question about that. But I saw it and I'm just like, who does that? Who in the world does that? It was the craziest thing I have ever seen before in my life. It's so awesome to see that somebody really took this. But that really should have been similar to at least the Rambam, maybe the Ramban's version of the Me'il. What's up? Oh, I didn't say that. I have no idea. Maybe it's like Rav Scheinberg. You wore just 100 pairs, and you just had another underneath. I'm assuming he had a pair underneath that went there. Oh, very good. So he was Machayev himself. Very good. Very good. We're going to talk about this as we go on. Another machlokes between the two is the bottom. On the bottom of the me'il were pomegranates and bells. That's what was on there. Now, Rashi says that between every two hollow pomegranates, there was a bell. The pomegranates were made again of blue, red, and purple wool. They were just woven together, so it was very pretty little pomegranates hanging down. And the bells were made of gold. There were clappers inside them, according to Rashi and the Rambam. There were golden clappers inside them, and they made noise as they went. Now, it was muffled a little bit because the pomegranates on the side muffled them from hitting anything else, but the clapper obviously made noise as the Kohen Gadol went. And that's not a shear for now why he had to have noise while he's walking through. Pomegranates are made of blue, red, and purple wool. The bells were made of gold and the clappers of the bells were made of gold. He'd walk around. He had pomegranate, gold, golden bell, pomegranate, pomegranate, golden bell, pomegranate, and went all the way around. That's what it seems to be according to Rashi. What's up? You know the clapper inside the bell? Like that little thing that goes in? The little clapper. Yeah, I didn't make it up. Yeah, it is the clapper of the bell, right? That's what it refers to.
A little bell.
Oh, really? That's cool. So that could very well be. Although I would think people wanted to wear clothing like the Kohen Gadol. So I'm sure other people wore bells as well. They put their bells on, right? Well, the Ramban. I'm sorry. That was a. Not the best joke I've ever made. While the Ramban says it makes no sense that the pomegranates would be hollow and you wouldn't put anything inside there. That makes no sense. Meaning, if the pomegranates were filled, then I understand you can't put anything in there. But Rashi's saying the pomegranates were hollow and you put the bells on the side. Says Ramban, that makes no sense. It's got to be that the bells were in the hollow pomegranates. Said every pomegranate had a bell in there, and that's the way it looked over there, and that they could be seen from the bottom. The Gemara in Zvachim on Pei Chesim Abeis seems to say like the Ramban very clearly. It says exactly there was pomon. And within the pomon is the rimon. Is the pomon. It seems to say it extremely clearly, and that's that. Either way, there were 72 of them. Now, according to Rashi, this number is a little bit skewed, because if it really was pomegranate, right, bell, pomegranate, pomegranate, bell, pomegranate, then to say there were 72 is a little bit off. It can't be 36 of each, right? But according to the Rambam, and according to the Ramban, there were 72 altogether, 72 pomegranates, 72 bells, and they either, you know, went 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, or according to...
It's 2, 1, 2, 1.
That's what it sounds like. 1, pomegranate, yeah, 2, pomegranate, bell, pomegranate, pomegranate, bell, pomegranate. But again, that might be a mistake in how we're reading Rashi, but I looked up the Mizrahi, the Gurari. The way it seems from Rashi is that it's pomegranate, bell, pomegranate, pomegranate, bell, pomegranate. That's what it seems. And according to the Rambam, it's 1111111. The Rambam says, like Rashi, but not exactly. The Balei Torah says 72, because there are 72 Maros Nagayim that comes from Lashon Hara. We're going to see that the Me'il is Mechaper for Lashon Hara. He says, Zav Verimon Pamon, Zav Verimon Al is the Gematria of Haim Shivim Vishtayim, which is a great Gematria. I challenge you to go figure that one out. The Targum Yonasan seems to say there were 70 of them, but that seems to be a mistake. It looks like it's a mistake over there. Nonetheless, the Pasuk seems to make more sense, like Rashi, the Rashbam, the Chizkuni, the Balei Tosos all say like Rashi that it was Pamon, Rimon, and whatever it was, that they were separate from one another, not inside the other. The Rambam says that as well. The Kesef Mishnah and the Mizrahi bring a possible idea. There's a Brisa in Zvachim that says the bells were hanging and the pomegranates were hanging, which sounds like they were separate, not all together in one. And the weird thing is Targum Yonasan. Targum Unklos and Yonasan over here say that they are Beinehon. Does anybody know Aramaic well enough to tell me what Beinehon means? Between them. So that the bells were between the pomegranates. But in Parshas Pekudei, he says, Begavehon. They were inside them, which sounds like the Ramban. So it sounds ridiculous. Targum Unkelus seems to switch off and say, like, the Rashi over here and the Ramban over there. What does he actually say? That's a little bit of Akasha. There is a Ber Basada, a Gur Ari over here. Regardless, we know that the Kohen Gadol could not go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim while wearing gold clothing. Why couldn't he go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim wearing gold clothing? Egel Azov, Ein Kateger, Nasa Saneger. You've heard that line before? The accuser, the Egel Azov, cannot become the defendant. I can't go in wearing all gold. So says the Maral Diskin, that's why he couldn't wear the Choshen, because it had gold strings. The Ephod, it had gold strings. And the Tzitz, which was entirely gold. That I get. But why couldn't he wear the Me'il? Why not wear the Me'il? The Me'il was entirely Tcheles. There's no gold involved in the Me'il. So why couldn't he walk in, says the Maral Diskin? That must mean that Rashi is correct. Why does that mean it that way? Because he says the following. There is gold on the meal. Where is there gold on the meal? On the bottom by the bells. According to Rashi, the bells are separate from the Rimonim. You have a Rimon and a bell, and a Rimon and a bell. So the bell is showing. You can't have gold, so you're not allowed to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Says Rashi, it makes sense. Why you couldn't wear the meal into the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
But didn't he wear it so knowing that he was alive in the Kodesh HaKadoshim?
No, you couldn't. Couldn't wear it. In Kateger Nasasenegar. So he didn't wear the meal. So what did he do instead? What about the Ramban? The Ramban says that the bell was inside the pomegranate. What does that mean if the bell was inside the pomegranate? The gold could not be seen. If the gold couldn't be seen, says the Maral Diskin, then according to the Ramban, why can't you wear the Me'il on Yom Kippur? Why can't you do it? Now, granted, it is still gold. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu obviously can see through the blue. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu can see that you're taking off the gold to walk inside. What difference does it make? So says the Maral Diskin, why not? Why not wear the Me'il if they're covered? Says Maral Diskin, sounds like Rashi. Now, he answers it. They're not great answers. One of the answers is, it's like the Netziv above. You weren't allowed to wear the Me'il without the Ephod. You had to wear the ephod and the me'il together. And if you couldn't wear the ephod, because it's made of gold, you couldn't wear the me'il. That's one of the answers, even according to the Ramban.
Wasn't all four of the begadim dependent on
one? Not dependent on one another. No, if you didn't have the choshen, you could in theory... the choshen and the ephod were automatically together. If you didn't have the tzitz, you could in theory wear the other clothing. But nonetheless, here the me'il, he says, is connected to it. That's one answer, but it's an idea that it seems like Rashi. The Chassam Sofer, of course, says no one's arguing. No one's arguing. There were pamonim separate from the rimonim, and then there were rimonim that had pamonim inside. Of course. They're both right. Rashi's right and the Ramban's right. And there were both types that were around there. And he says the pshat is that we know, again, the me'il is mechaper for Lashon Hara. Each one of the eight big day kahuna was mechaper for something. For example, the tzitz was mechaper for azus metzach, for brazenness. The migbas, or the mitznefes, the hat that he wore, was mechaper for gaiva. Each one, the michnasayim was mechaper for gili arayis. The ksones was mechaper for, give me a second, shvichus damim, right? The ephod was mechaper for avodah zarah. And the Me'il was Mechaper for Lashon Hara. It's each one. There was something that each one had that was over there. Says the Chassam Sofer, there's two types of Lashon Hara that a person could speak. He says, number one, there's people that speak Stam Lashon Hara about their friends. They say terrible things about their friends and act them down. And there's number two, they say good things about their friends, which can also lead to Lashon Hara. Does anybody know what that's called? Avak Lashon Hara. And Avak Lashon Hara is the second part. So there are some where it's Pamonim, the straight out bells. The bells are out there and the guy's loud and he's saying something and it's clearly Lashon Hara. And then there's something that hides where it's not exactly Lashon Hara, where the pomegranate surrounds it. It doesn't look like Lashon Hara because it looks like he's complimenting his friend. It looks like he's giving the guy some praise, but that's called Avak Lashon Hara. You're saying it specifically to a person who you know is going to say something bad back. Oh, that guy? That guy is... that. That's the idea behind it. So says the Ramban, there were both. The Chassam Sofer, I'm sorry, there were both. Now, let's go back to the Gemara in Arachin. It's a Gemara in Arachin, Tes Zayin and Aleph. Again, you're not going to see too many Gemaras, too many Shirim quoting a Gemara in Arachin. So when you get one, you gotta go through. Again, each pair of clothing was Mechaper for something. The Me'il was Mechaper for Lashon Hara. The Kliyakar says, that's why the Me'il was made with Tcheles. Because it was Mechaper for Lashon Hara. What's the Pshat in Tcheles? He says, the color of Tcheles is the color of the sea. And when you look at the tchelas on your tzitzis, you're supposed to see the ocean. The sea, I know. But you're supposed to see the blue of the sea. You're supposed to think of the ocean. Now, here's how the Kliyakar explains it. Hashem will never allow the sea to come up upon dry land. And I know tsunamis. I know. But the fact is, it's amazing. If you go to the Science and Industry, the Museum of Science and Industry in downtown Chicago, you're going to see that they have a storm, a whole thing about storms. There's like a whole storm section. In there, you can make your own waves and you watch the waves break as they come up. You can set up your own, you know, basically beach and you see how waves are broken up on this as soon as they come up. It's impossible. God made it in such a way where it depends. You know how sometimes you see like underneath the ocean when you go inside, obviously in a separate beach, but when you go there, you can see it, the sand in the lake or in the ocean, you see it's got waves. Some of them are like waves, while others are rocks and others there's like precipitous drops, it like keeps going like that. It's the coolest thing, how the wave breaks up. And by oceans, it's specifically done in such a way, not everywhere, but in many, many places, where it's done in such a way where it is impossible for a wave to come that high. Now, of course, the water level can just keep rising. That's usually what happens with a tsunami, where it just rises. You don't see that huge wave come crashing in, but all of a sudden the water just rises like that and it's too late and then everybody dies. But aside from the water just rising, a huge wave cannot come past the land. It's almost impossible. There's no way for it to happen. It's the coolest thing you've ever seen. It's like it'll come a little bit, but it won't get any further than that. It can't come any further than that. It's really an unbelievable thing. It's one of the problems. It's not for now, but one of the problems in a place like Chicago is you don't have that sort of like that sandy thing that comes up. You ever been by that one part of Lakeshore Drive where like they have to close it off if there's a huge storm and the waves are like coming up? That's because it goes straight down. And it's the coolest thing because it doesn't have the breakage. When it goes like that, it breaks. The waves can't go any further. But if it goes straight down, the wave is coming right up against it. That, it's fine. And then it goes all the way down. But the wave can go up and then it goes up, but it doesn't go further. So you notice by the S curve of Lakeshore Drive, exactly, because that wasn't the original land. 100%, it wasn't the original land. They made it in such a way, so by the beaches, they made it so that the waves can't come up. So by the S-curve, you won't see the lake go all the way up. But by this part, there's one part of it in which it's just literally, it just goes straight in. It's the coolest thing to be able to understand. The idea is, says the Kliyakar, is that that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world. And when you think of the water and how it can't go any further, you say to yourself, it's the same thing with what I say, how my tongue works. I have blockages. My teeth are in front and my lips are in front. Now by my ears, if somebody is speaking Lashon Hara, I have my earlobes that I can close. My earlobes are, I don't even know what these guys are called, the little guys that are strange, that I can close and I don't have to hear anything. By my nose, I can close my nose. My eyes, I have my eyelids. By the mouth, I have a double covering. to stop myself from speaking Lashon Hara with my teeth and then afterward my lips. Says the Kli Yakar, that's the idea. The color blue should remind you of the sea, that the sea stops when it comes to the sand, and you should also stop. You should stop from speaking Lashon Hara, and that's the idea of the idea behind it. The reason for the bells and the pomegranates is making noise to be machaper for the noise that comes from your mouth. That the noise should be something different. By looking even further, you go, after I think of the sea, I think of the sky. The sky reminds me of the Kisei HaKavod. Says the Kli Yakar, you should always think of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that'll stop you from doing something wrong. The idea is, and what he's trying to say is, a person would never sin if he thinks about the heavens above him, and he uses the tcheles that he has on him, on his tzitzis, and the tcheles of the me'il, to think to himself, I can't speak Lashon Hara. That's how he understands. Now, of course, who's going to speak about the me'il being mechaper on Lashon Hara? Who's the one person who's going to speak about Lashon Hara by anything? The Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim is just an awesome remez over here. He says in Shmiras HaLashon that Lashon Hara, there's a medrash, that Lashon Hara is an effect all the way up to the heavens. It affects everyone all the way up to the heavens, which is why one has to be reminded of blue of the heavens when looking at the Me'il. He adds that the hem, which has to be closed off, and instead of being a, you know, it's really like a collar, instead of being a hem like this, like ending like that, by the me'il, has to close in. It has to be turned in a little bit. He says that's what it has to be over here as well. You have to close up your mouth and not allow anything bad, as if it's sewn together your mouth and you can't go any further. The pomegranates and bells are saying instead, go learn or be quiet. The bells refer to go learn. The pomegranates mean don't make a sound. Don't say anything whatsoever. And then if he does that, when you go into the Kodesh HaKadoshin, which is referring to Shamayim after 120, you'll be rewarded. That's the idea that Chafetz Chaim says. Rav Sternbach talks about this as well. Okay, there's Miyam Lois, but we're going to skip that for right now. The Chassam Sofer says another thing over here regarding the Eifod, but you can look at it yourself. Chassam Sofer then brings a tremendous remez. He says one of the ways to get out of speaking Lashon Hara is by only speaking Torah. Since you're always talking in Torah, if somebody tries to bring up Lashon Hara, you're just going to switch subjects because you want to talk about Torah. You don't want to talk about Lashon Hara. You want to talk about something else. The Me'il was showing that when you're going to start talking in Torah, it should be entirely blue. L'shem Shamayim. Use your words and start speaking L'shem Shamayim. The bottom of the Me'il, says the Chassam Sofer, with the pomegranates and the bells, refer to the Zvulins that support the L'shem Shamayim Torah of the Yisachar. That's the idea behind it. You have the Zvulins on the bottom and the Yisachar that goes all the way up. The same way that a pomegranate is filled with seeds, as they claim, the 613 seeds of a pomegranate. I know a guy that counted once. He came out with 236. I told him, you didn't count a pomegranate at the base of Mikdash. That's what you didn't do. Pomegranates at the base of Mikdash, for sure it's 613, maybe 614. Either way, regardless, the pomegranates stand for the Jews that are giving the money, that are Malayim Mitzvos Kerimim. They're filled with mitzvos like a pomegranate. That's what it refers to. And that even they should be learning Torah, and the bells are there so that even they should continue learning Torah as well. That's the idea behind it. And perhaps it refers to the Gaitan, whatever it is. And it's got to be real Torah. That's what the meal stands for, says the Chassam Sofer. It has to be not me suffer v'lachutz, where you're just speaking out Torah, but you're not real like Doi Go Adomi. It has to be real Torah that affects people, and that's the idea. It can never be stopped. It has to be that way, and then you'll stop yourself from speaking Lashon Hara. Now, the Ben Ish Chai says the Pamon hints to a person may speaking Lashon Hara, and he says the Pamon is made of gold. He says Zahav is a word in Hebrew that keeps getting less and less. Now, he explains, when a person has money, he always wants more and more, and it feels like he has less and less. So Zahav is, Zion is 7, Hay is 5, Bays is 2. Keeps going lower and lower and lower. That's what happens. When a guy has a ton of money, you end up losing. You feel like you're losing more and more and more as time goes on. So the Zahav, the Pamon of Zahav, meant that the guy is missing out on something. He keeps getting less and less. The Rimon stands for, it was made of three different threads, the blue, the purple, and the red threads. And those three refer to the three sins, the cardinal sins that Lashon Hara compares itself to. Lashon Hara is like Gilui Raya, Shvichus Dam, Avodah Zarah. Therefore, it has three strings. And then he says, there's a Gemara in Arachin. Gemara in Arachin says that Lashon Hara kills three people. The one who says it, the one who hears it, and the one that it's spoken about. That's what Lashon Hara does. It kills all three. The teller, the listener, and the one it's spoken about. Everyone wonders, where does the Gemara get that from? How do you know this? Where does that come from? And I always thought that it was based on Miriam speaking Lashon Hara, Aaron hearing the Lashon Hara, and Moshe being spoken about. All three of them died before they got to Eretz Yisrael. All three of them died. So my assumption always was that how do you know Lashon Hara kills three? From Miriam, Aaron, and Moshe. The first time that we see something major, a real Lashon Hara.
That the reason they died was because of that.
So it's not that entirely, but I do now, once I saw Chassam Sofer, I was able to put my thoughts together. It goes like this. We know why Aaron and Moshe didn't make it in Eretz Yisrael, because of May Mariva, right? Why did Miriam not make it in Eretz Yisrael? So if you tell me she was just old. Right? She was just old. I hear that, but it makes no sense. Why wouldn't, according to the Miyamalois, she was the only woman who died, right? Why wouldn't she be able, Zocha, to go in? We have to tell you why Aaron and Moshe didn't go in. Why not Miriam? So Chassam Sofer says it. Lashon Hara kills three. And that's why Miriam died, and that's really why Moshe and Aaron died, because of the Lashon Hara that was told, and they had a chance to be metaking the Lashon Hara by speaking to the rock. Had they used Dibor for good and caused a lesson to be learned from Dibor, they wouldn't have been killed. But nonetheless, that was there. So that's the idea. I always thought that way. But the Ben Ishkai says, I have a Medrash. I found this Medrash in a Sefer called Beis Yisrael. He didn't write who the author was. I don't know. And I will tell you, this is one of the most challenging stories that I have ever heard before in my life. I want you to help me with this. Again, this is my translation. Maybe I'm wrong in the translation, but I'm pretty good at this, right? But listen to what happened. A man had three daughters. One was lazy. One was a thief. And one loved speaking Lashon Hara. She loved talking Lashon Hara. So he wanted to marry them off, but nobody wanted to marry them because these girls were all terrible. Each one of them had this chisaron where everybody was like, look, they're pretty and all, but you know, it's not all about the looks. It's also about the midos. And your midos are not stellar, so I don't want it. I don't want them. So nobody married them. They were getting older. And the man had a friend, you know, it's like 16. And the man had a friend that came to the house and saw these three girls and said, you know, I have three sons. And in the way of the world back then, why don't my three sons marry your three daughters? So the guy said, you don't want these girls. You know, they've got terrible midos. You know, one of them, you're a friend of mine. I'm just telling you, one's a massive thief. The other one is a massive person with Lashon Hara. The other one was really lazy. I don't think it's going to work. The guy's like, look, I'm not so into my sons either. But the fact is, right, at the end of the day, these three girls look like they're really nice girls. And I think I have a way of getting out of it. I think I have a way of fixing all of the three problems. So he brought them back. He brought them back for his sons. And all three of them, he did the following. By the one that was really lazy, he took 10 servants, 10 maid servants, and he said to them, look, you are going to be working specifically with this girl. Do not let her lift a finger. Okay? Anything she wants, you go ahead and do for her. She wants to get herself dressed, you get her dressed. She wants to get herself bathed, you get her bathed. She wants to make herself an egg, you know, an omelet, you make the omelet for her. Do not let her lift a finger. Let her just sit down and do nothing. So the girl, right, obviously she was a lazy, you know, good for nothing. And this time she was like the happiest lady of all time. Like anytime she wanted to lift a finger, somebody else was doing it for her. She didn't have to do anything. She was perfectly fine. The second one, the one that was a thief. So the guy brought all of his accounts. He brought all of his numbers, everything out there, and all the locks, you know, to all the keys, to all the locks, to all of his treasures. And he gave it over to the girl and he said, listen, you're a thief. You love money. I'll give you all of my money. You can do whatever you want with it. You can spend anything you want. It's all in your hands. I trust you with it. It's all yours. So the girl's like, are you kidding me? Of course, right? There was no online shopping back then, so it made it a little bit easier for this guy. But regardless, he said, okay, so that girl, fine. The third girl, the one who loved speaking Lashon Hara, so what did the guy do? He said, all right, every day I'm going to come to you. And every day he would go up to her and he would say, tell me anything you want to tell me. I want to hear everything. Anything you want to tell me about your husband, anything you want to tell me about your sisters, anything you want to tell me about anything, I want to listen. So the girl was weirded out by that. I'm not telling my father-in-law all my, you know, all the Lashon Hara. Like, I can do it to a friend. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll text a friend. But I'm not going to talk to my father-in-law. I'm not going to sit down with him. That's just weird. I'm just not doing it. So she was silent. When the father of these three girls came to visit to see how his daughters were faring, so he came in and he saw the one that was a thief. She was the happiest girl alive. Happiest girl, like Scrooge McDuck, like, you know, like jumping into the golden coins and like swimming around and everything. She was the happiest person you could ever imagine. The other girl who is this, you know, this lazy girl and everything, happiest girl alive. Daddy, I've gained 140 pounds. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to lift a finger, right? Everything's perfectly fine. The third girl, right, the one who would only speak Lashon Hara, right, she was all sad. So the father said, what's wrong? He said, I wanted one husband. I didn't need two husbands. He said, what do you mean? He said, I can't explain it to you. Wait until my father-in-law comes in tomorrow. So the next day, the father hid behind one of the curtains, and the father-in-law walked in, said the same thing he usually does. Please tell me what you need. I can help you. I can do everything. Right? She said, stop bothering me already. So the father didn't understand what was going on. So the father ran into the room, with his knife out, thinking that the father-in-law was trying to do something to his daughter, took his knife and stabbed the guy in the heart and killed his friend, the father-in-law of this girl. As that was going on, the sons heard the screams of their father. The sons walked in, saw the father of the girl with, you know, the bloody, their father-in-law, and they were like, what just happened? They took out their swords and they cut off his head. Right? The girl started screaming, saying, you don't know what happened! And they hated her so much that they just stabbed her. So all three of them died. Says the Ben Ish Chai, that's the source behind the Gemara that Lashon Hara kills three. Now, what's the challenging part? I have no idea what the Lashon Hara was. Says the Ben Ish Chai, that's the source behind it. I would assume what it means is, and I'm assuming, again, this is all an assumption of what it means, is that you have to be careful with your words and explain what you mean, or something like this might happen. Your father, father-in-law, and you might die. That's a possibility, but I have no idea what it means, but the Ben Ish Chai says that's where it comes from, and that's the idea behind it. Now, why didn't this beg it have tzitzis? If the Me'il was four-cornered, according to the Rambam, the Ramban, however you want to learn it, the Ralbag, why didn't this beg it have tzitzis? It seemingly looked like one big pair of tzitzis, so why wasn't it chayiv in tzitzis? So I have four answers to the question. The Radvaz rejects a few answers. He says, maybe it did have tzitzis. He said, it can't be. Nobody mentions anywhere the Me'il had tzitzis. It can't be that it had tzitzis. He rejects that completely. He said, maybe you couldn't put them on because they'll drag on the ground. You can't have tzitzis dragging on the ground. He says, it can't be. Can't be they're going to drag on the ground. It's in the Kodesh, in the Azara, everything was clean there, everything was good, so there's no way that would be it, that they wouldn't put it on because it was dragging on the ground. So he said, you know what it must be? It must be that this is not considered a four-cornered beged. It must be that something that is attached by the throat and then from there goes down and is open is not considered a beged and not chayiv in tzitzis. That must be what it is. It's not considered a beged. Now, I don't know what that means. I don't know what the Radvaz means by that. I am not, you know, I didn't look up enough into it as to why that would make a poncho. A poncho normally should be chayiv in tzitzis. But according to this, a poncho would never be chayiv in tzitzis, even if it has four corners, because it's only attached by the neck. Right? That's what I would think. Our pairs of tzitzis, what we have, right? Our pairs of tzitzis, the regular cotton tzitzis. Maybe the wool ones are a little bit bigger, but the cotton tzitzis that have, not the t-shirt ones, but the ones that just basically have a little rim around and then they're open, wide open. Why are those chayiv in tzitzis according to this? I don't understand why, again, according to the Radvaz, that it's not chayiv in tzitzis because it's only attached by the neck. Then a regular pair of tzitzis shouldn't be chayiv in tzitzis.
So maybe it has to do with the length. Like if a poncho, it's just, the idea of it is like a big cape.
Yeah.
It just happens to fly in all directions. The tzitzis we wear, like, go up to here.
Okay, I hear you. I would need that to be said by the Radvaz. Hear what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe there is an answer to this. Maybe it's obvious.
Is there a maximum size?
Yeah, it's got to be something that a person would wear.
No, but big, I mean, going up? Can you wear like a
triple
extra large?
No, I mean, it's got to be something that a person would wear. If nobody would wear, if you wouldn't wear this, that's not a pair that's chayiv in tzitzis. You know those huge like Kamalah HaGoel things that they wear in that they have on Simchas Torah?
There's a hole in them.
Yeah, those are not chayiv in tzitzis. Those are never chayiv in tzitzis because they're not even a blade. I don't know what it is.
Maybe that's the point with the Me'il.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's possible. It's just, wait, to me, it's weird that he didn't mention it that way. What's up, Yuda?
I mean, first of all, talis are kind of like a poncho.
Yeah, agreed. So it should be chayiv. So yeah.
Our tzitzis are not by the throat. They're really hanging off our shoulders.
Their shoulders. Yeah, I know. I hear what you're saying. But so was the Me'il. In other words, that's what the Me'il looked like. If you look on that little picture right over there in the middle, it's really hanging off the shoulders. It's attached like right there. So why would that be any different? See, I hear what you're saying. I agree. I just don't know what the gedarim are. That's the problem. The Minchas Chinuch asked this in Mitzvah Tzadi Test. He asked, why isn't it chayiv in tzitzis? And he said, because it didn't belong to the Kohen. A borrowed pair of tzitzis, especially one that belongs to Hektish, is not chayiv in tzitzis. So since it belonged to the Beis HaMikdash, and since it was borrowed, it wasn't chayiv in tzitzis. So it wasn't, they didn't put tzitzis on it. That's an obvious answer. That's what the Minchas Chinuch says. Now, lots of people ask on that, but regardless, the Ein Techeles, the Sefer Ein Techeles, says that the pomegranates on the bottom and the bells may have been considered tzitzis, since they were made out of wool and could be seen hanging from the bottom. Now, the problem is, what does that mean? There's no strings. It's not the regular strings that you'd have, and it's not specifically at the corners. What does that mean? So he says, there's a Gemara Menachos, Mem Aleph Amabez, that says that a shirt made entirely blue, it's all tchelis, needs tzitzis with blue and another material. It has to be mixed in with something. So, very good. It's the same kasha that Korach asked. He's said it does need tzitzis, but it needs to be with another material as well. Therefore, it could be that the pomegranates, which were made up of blue, red, and scarlet, and purple strings, perhaps those were considered tzitzis, even though they were wrapped up together to make a pomegranate. Meaning, normally, that's not tzitzis. It has to be strings that are hanging. There has to be a gedil and a psil. There has to be something that's there. Maybe this is good enough. That's his idea of what it was over there. Okay, either way, that's that. The Ksav HaKabbalah explains it just a little bit more. He says, the mitzvah by regular tzitzis is to see them. The wording of the pasuk is, ureisem oso. And you will see them with your very eyes. You'll see them on, and you'll be reminded of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you see them, you're reminded of Hashem. By the me'il, the mitzvah was to hear them. To hear the sound that comes out. Thus, they made the tzitzis into bells and pomegranates. By a regular pair of tzitzis, the mitzvah is to see the tzitzis and remind yourself of Hashem. By the me'il, the mitzvah is to hear them, so they made them into bells and pomegranates. And that's the tzitzis by there. It was a different mitzvah, so to speak, says the Ksav HaKabbalah. And maybe the Kohanim needed a bigger reminder. There was the issue of the seeing, which they had, by just looking at the blue tcheles, and the issue of the hearing, because they had so many more mitzvahs, and they also needed the bells and pomegranates. Maybe that's the idea behind it of why it had tzitzis, possibly, but I don't have a great answer. Those were the only four answers that I could find. I welcome any others. There is another answer the Sefer Ein Tchila says regarding the chatzitza for the avoda, that it wasn't mentioned, so it's a gzeres hakasuv. I don't consider those answers. That's just the reality of the situation is that it didn't have tzitzis, but why not? That's what I'm asking. Why not? Why didn't have it? There is a mashiloch over here. It's a tremendous mashiloch, but we're going to end with this for right now. Shkoyach, everybody. Have a great Shabbos.